WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Achieving legendary status is much easier than it used to be, but our language commentator Jeffrey Nunberg says that's really just a linguistic cheap trick.
I learned from One Day Sports page a couple of weeks ago that the new coach of the Sacramento Kings would be basketball legend Bill Russell, that another hoops legend, Julius Erving, was about to make his last NBA appearance, and that the Cincinnati Reds had moved into first place in the National League West under the tutelage of Diamond legend Pete Rose. Over the next few days, I found further references to rock and roll legend Jerry Lee Lewis, to country music legend Mickey Gilley, and to Motown legend Marvin Gaye. A TV ad promotes the legendary fit of Levi's jeans. I found an outboard motor and a designer chair, both calling themselves legends, and three legendary cars. Mind you, this is not counting another car that's actually named the legend, which has been in production for all of a year or so, and which cost about $10,000 more than a mere celebrity. The word legend has a somewhat roundabout history. Originally, it comes from Latin legenda, meaning that which is to be read. That explains why we still use the word to refer to the writing in the corners of maps and the like. In the Middle Ages, a legend was primarily a story of the life of a saint. From there, it acquired its modern sense of a story about remote and undocumented events which has been handed down through the ages by oral tradition. The subjects of legends don't have to be as remote as Robin Hood or King Arthur, of course. The early unrecorded blues musicians are genuinely legendary, and so too are those baseball players from the days before film or reliable record-keeping, like Cap Anson or Wee Willie Keeler. In the 20th century, however, genuinely legendary heroes have become a little thin on the ground, if only because we have the media around to document every event worth noting, and then some. Strictly speaking, there's nothing legendary about the deeds of Bill Russell or Pete Rose. You can be sure that every rebound and every hit is recorded on a piece of film somewhere. But of course, when people call someone a legend nowadays, they don't mean that his deeds or existence are undocumented. What people want to say about Bill Russell and Pete Rose is simply that they did such extraordinary things that no one will ever forget them. Now, we used to have a perfectly good word for this. We called such people famous. But fame is an inflated currency now, thanks to the power of those same media that made real legends obsolete. Vanna White is famous, and so are Ed McMahon, Fawn Hall, and the guy who makes Remington razors. Everybody gets to be famous for 15 minutes, as Andy What's-His-Name said. So what do we do when we want to honor someone whose fame is based on a genuine public recognition of merit? Why, we take a word that denotes the kind of enduring fame bestowed by word of mouth alone, the fame of legend. The irony is that the word legend itself is debased in the process. Once the media start to describe something as legendary, we can't tell whether its fame has a real popular base or whether it's just another creature of media hype. This is the paradox described by the critic Leo Brody in his recent History of Fame, suggestively titled The Frenzy of Renown. As Brody puts it, to be talked about is to be part of a story, and to be part of a story is to be at the mercy of storytellers.
Jeffrey Nunberg is a linguist associated with the Center for the Study of Language and Information at Stanford University.